Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 4 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, and Warhammer 40,000 The Valentine Heresy, as well as 4 event podcasts with mini-series releases at staggered intervals: Curse Code and Crown, Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please, join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pot, get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back to Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, where improvisers who've never role-played before journey into the world of Dungeons and Dragons. I am the Grand Wizard Bukake, your host. Juniper is continuing on her own quest while her companions are trying to stop the Horde. Juniper took some time to teach Pidwick how to survive outside of Candlekeep. Quinny experienced the horrors of Reginald's personal life, and Reginald armed and coordinated his new gang of gnomes in preparation for a heist. What will happen when Quinny and Reginald face off in the second stage of their plans? Find out next on Dumb Dumbs and Dragons.
So, Reginald, you awake with a start in your tiny, tiny, comfortable body, having slept for perhaps the first time since childhood outside of your armor. What does that feel like?
I think it's one of those things where it feels nice for a minute, and then it immediately feels like when you fall down in the dream, so you just like startle awake 100% because he assumes he has to be dead, and then realizes where he is, and he's surrounded by like snoring and farting gnomes in a room that's clown themed, which is sort of like hell but also not.
Gotcha. Okay, excellent.
But I do feel like he's got a weird moment of realizing what it's like to be theoretically well-rested, because I don't know if he's ever really had that experience. And colors just seem a little brighter, and he can, like, his sense of smell is slightly improved. He's really aware of things, and that's all, like, a pleasant but mildly overwhelming experience.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I get a really good night's sleep, because I don't normally sleep very well, I actually wake up, like, more tired and kind of, like, zony if I'm like, I had dreams and stuff. So do you think he's, like, he's obviously well-rested, but is it an impediment to him, or is it just kind of a fact of what's going on?
I think it might be an impediment just because he's used to having to fight against something at all times, and right now there's theoretically nothing to fight against. Like, he doesn't have to fight being tired to get ready. He can just get ready.
Right. Gotcha. Okay.
Weird.
Great. So you you kind of take your time getting ready. The gnomes are all kind of waking up getting themselves ready. It occurs to me that this might be a good time for us to properly introduce you to your gnome crew, so you know exactly what you're dealing with. So, as I mentioned previously, each of them basically has, like, an archetype or a skill that they're particularly good at. This is because I needed to simplify it.
Because
they're all good at breaking into things. Oh, okay, I'll take the one who's good. Oh. So, you have Lyndon, who is the leader, and is generally, she is your best generalist. She is pretty good at everything. If this was a video game where you had to, like, assign people to a task on, like, a go collect supplies or defend the base while I'm gone, the highest you can get is a B, and she's a B. So where everyone else kind of ranks in that C and D, she's definitely, a B. I mean, if you'd got the pre-order character, they would just be like an A plus all across the board and just instant win for you, but you didn't. So, you have to play the game like a normal person. So, you've got Lyndon again, pretty good at everything, is, good enough to have organized the crew in the first place. So has some vague idea of what she's doing. Dice Thoreau is their sleight of hand guy. His job is distractions and sleight of hand. You can assume from what you've seen of him that his rank is definitely not a B. You've got Pointy, who is the dud. So he's
Pointy
the
or Pointy.
Pointy. It's short for Poindexter, his full name, okay. But he's just Pointy. So wow. P-O-I-N-Y. Pointy is, he is like a Milhouse Van Houten kind of dude. Really plays up the sort of bumbling, Jerry Lewis bit.
Nutty Professor kind of thing.
Yeah. Just a very like, stumbly and kind of like, oh geez, he's the where Dice is good at sleight of hand, this guy is an expert pickpocket. He's the one who left the note in Quinny's pocket back when Quinny was still wearing a Quinny suit. So yeah, very good at being innocuous. If we're talking Ocean's 11 terms, he's Matt Damon. Just like, I'll bump into you and steal your watch.
Got it.
And he's pretty good at it, as evidenced by him getting the note into, like, Quinny knew to look, but it wasn't because he felt it. He just knew that if someone bumps into you in a bar, that's probably what they're doing. So you've got those three. There are two lookouts. We'll call them Babs and Deb. Babs and Deb are just very good at seeing things. They work together. They're like... they're twins, so they have one of those weird, like, twin languages that only twins understand, that they use to communicate kind of over distance, but are very good at that. They can also be used as a helpful matrix distraction if you want to fuck with people's heads, where sometimes they'll do, like, as part of a grift, one of them will walk out and then bump into someone, and then the other one will walk out a moment later from a different direction and then pretend to be the same person to just disorient and confuse. They themselves are... pretty into just talking to each other, but you get the sense that if used correctly, they're very effective, but they're probably terrible at almost everything else. So that is five of your eight. There is a you've got a getaway artist, and his name is, oh wait, no, I need the other sheet, sorry, one moment.
His name.
Oh, his name is Trenzalore.
Trenzalore.
But no. Like two words.
Oh, okay.
Like Tren space Zelor.
Okay.
Okay, that's fine.
He Laura, what's that a reference to? I know it not.
Doctor Who. That is the where the Doctor should have died? Question mark?
So, being a big fan of the traveling show Professor What? This gnome has clearly taken a name of some value to the dear professor, and is trying to be cool about it. So, in proper getaway fashion, sunglasses, red leather jacket, someone who is clearly talking a big game. That said, there are no vehicles to be had, and you don't get the sense that he's necessarily ever driven anything. But he's constantly just talking about how he's the best getaway driver. Very much a renegade type. So you have Trenzalore, and your final guy is...
I have two more, I think, because you've told me six.
You do have two more. Great. You have two thugs. And they're thugs not in that they're actually good at fighting, but in that they're good at kind of getting in people's way and tripping them up. They're a couple of super bro weightlifter types while still being like gangly teenagers. They're going to be Bud and Guy.
Bud and Guy.
Lyndon assures you those are not actually their names. It's just the only thing they've ever referred to each other as. Got a bit of a Terrence and Phillip Bud Guy kind of situation going on. Yeah, so eventually they were just kind of like, fuck it, I guess that's your names. So best to think of them less as rough and tumble guys and more so like obstacles. Like they're hardy little dudes. So if they can get underfoot or just plant in front of people who are running, they can kind of interfere with flow of traffic. But they're not like wet work, like punchy guys, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't have like assassins or fighters. No. This is gnome thief crew. Raiders.
And again, keeping in mind, they're all gnomes and they're all like teenage gnomes. So they're like, when I say rough and tumble guys, like they're stocky and hardy for their size and age, but like they're not.
They're Crab and Goyle at age 14.
I don't want to mention it's like, yeah, we got a bunch of kids. We're like, yay, skee ball. Then yeah. Two guys are like, I fucked your mom. They're like, I fucked your mom. Fear me.
All right. So I think once everybody's kind of awake, Quinny will be in his full gear. Overnight, he's fashioned himself some stilts. That he can build into his gear to look like a regular person-sized human.
You took them off one of the clown dolls that was in the room?
Oh, 100%, yes. So the plan is, he's like, all right, it's time for me to walk you through what our plan is for this heist. I haven't seen the place, which is why we're going with a classic. And he's tried to remember what spies would do, and then also thinking about what Quinny would do. And also, I feel like he talked with Mickey about it to kind of solidify the plan. So rather than doing an incredibly long monologue where we all imagine gnomes nodding, just imagine this is that monologue where he like gets out, you know, he takes toys off the thing and he builds a little dock and he's like, here's what I think we're going to do. So the rough plan is he's going to split into two teams. There's Team Steel Stuff, which is Lyndon, Dice, Tren, Bud, and Guy. And then there's Team, or I guess, yeah, Lyndon. No, we'll take Lyndon, Tren, Bud, and Guy. Dice, Pointy, Babs, and Deb are Team Distract. So Team Distract's job is the two lookouts are going to post themselves. They can be in their thieving gear so that they hide good. And their job is to watch for whatever bone crushers are going to get sent to pick up the delivery. Quinny's hoping it'll be Reginald, because if Reginald was smart, then he'll have got himself there. I mean, Reginald as Quinny is hoping that Quinny as Reginald will show up. So the plan there is the lookouts spot them. Then Pointy, because he's the bumbling pickpocket, will go up and slip a note to Reginald, which is actually Quinny inside Reginald, basically explaining, like, we're going to steal this thing. Get as distracted as you can by our distraction and make sure who's with you is distracted. And then we're going to introduce Dice, whose job is to just distract the shit out of it as assisted by the lookouts. Just buy as much time in a way that won't get you killed. We don't need them to fight. We don't need them to shoot. Whatever he thinks the distraction is, just keep, like, slow them down. And then there's Team Steel Shit. And he gives gags to Bud, Guy, and Lyndon. And he explains, as he pulls out the top hat with the veil, he's going to go up and pretend that he is Fluffy McSnugglekin, having been ordered by Kira Bloodfist to come and claim the delivery. And these are his soldiers, the gagged ones. And they're going to go in and just try to basically find the right crate and then carry it the hell out. And Tren's job is to steal them a boat for the getaway so they don't have to try to run through town. Instead, they can boat away and everybody will go back to the boat when he shoots an eldritch blast into the sky. That's the like run back to the boat.
Tren's like, I'm your man. And he tries to flip his sunglasses up and he misses and stabs himself in the eye with one of the arms. He's like, ow, I'm your man.
Okay, I want to be clear. It doesn't have to be a great boat. I don't want the biggest boat. I want one you could drive and one that's fast. That's
I can drive anything. I'm the best getaway driver.
Okay, listen, I need you all to really step up and be pros on this one. Pointy, you probably want to get disguised as some sort of old man or something.
Okay.
Lookouts, you guys can be dressed up as normal. Dice, I'm gonna say this is a Dice's Choice mission. You do what you gotta do in terms of your outfit that'll be the most distracting.
I'm gonna dress like Quinny Brown Barrow.
Honestly, cool. Maybe they'll think you're the little guy who was next to Reginald earlier. Nice. And the rest of us, thief gear. I added some extra knives to my outfit. If you guys want to take out whatever knives you've got and just stick them out of your shoulders so that they look spiky, here's your gags.
Lyndon takes the only knife that all of them saved up to get and like wedges it into her shoulder. It's like a weird butter knife thing that's been kind of sharpened. And she's like, yeah, violence.
All right, yeah, you're the most in charge of the gagged ones, but you guys can't talk, okay? Only I get to talk. Close enough. This is why we went with the gags. All right, let's move out. We got to find this boat. All right. Mickey, where you at?
Hey, he just like pops up from kind of like just behind your boot. He's like, guys, hiding behind your boot just in case you needed me.
All right, I need you to be as useful as possible so you can climb up and just hide in my outfit. But don't talk unless I ask you questions.
Yeah, all right. Hey, look, this might be an indelicate question, but you mind if I hide in your hat?
Oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. Yeah, you should do that. I was going to say, I thought you were going to ask, and I was going to be like, yes, there's a huge hog in this pants. It's just, it happens. It's a
hog's man's own business. Me, I'm just looking for a hat ride.
Perfect. Then climb on in. It's what Quinny Brown Barrow would do.
Yeah, my name's Mickey the Rat, which is a pretty third-person-y kind of name, but gotta tell you, Mr. Quinny Brown Barrow, you say your own name more than anyone I've ever met. Cool. You're a cool guy.
That's exactly how I want to be seen. I want people to look at me and say, so fucking cool, and stuff like that.
Yeah, all right. I dig that. All right, get in your hat. It just like scampers up into your hat.
Yeah, and then Reginald will put on the hat and the veil falls down to hide his face. And then he'll climb up on the stilts and just practice walking in a creepy, fluffy McSnugglekins kind of way.
Incidentally, you weren't here for this, but this is pretty much what he looked like when he was undercover as the Ringmaster in Hell. Just like accidentally recreated a Quinny classic.
Nice.
All right, cool. Speaking of Quinny, you awake in Reginald body, and for a minute you had just the worst dream that you were stuck in Reginald's stupid body having to do stupid things. It wasn't a dream. It's real.
Oh, damn it.
You say, as in a remarkably good Reginald, as you you sit up amongst the sort of assorted nightmare monsters and thugs sitting around you. There's still certainly a lot of commotion. Looks like people have been kind of working overnight. Obviously, this counts as a full night rest, so like get your shit back. Yes, the day of the shipment has arrived. So you receive word that the shipment will be coming in about an hour. It'll take them a little bit of time to offload the boat. What preparations do you think you would make?
Quinny's plan as Reginald is to go down with his squad, however many people he has with him, mm-hmm. And to create an impromptu checkpoint. The war with the cause been going on, and there's a recent upheaval in neighboring Barovia, not too far from here. So it's important to make sure that things coming and going into and out of Whelm's port are are properly screened, I think is kind of like the smoke screen story that he would provide to like the citizens and stuff like that. And since the guards showed such deference to him and Kira when they came into the town, he would probably command some of them to assist with the checkpoint to make it look legit.
Yeah, I like that. I was going to say, given that the triumvirate fears reprisal from sort of the local nobility, if they're seen to be doing anything untoward, just you guys setting up a checkpoint would feel a bit like an invading army. But I think with that caveat that you're using like the local forces to run it, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. Okay, great. So how many people do you want to bring with you on this?
Kira has to come. I think he would want Jinpai. I keep having to go back to make sure I've got that name right.
Yeah, Jinpai.
I'll write it down on my new page. Because there is a... Who knows how rock solid, but there is a budding alliance there.
We've established it's very rock solid for Jinpai, but we'll see how rock solid it is.
Well, it could all be an act or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have to think
with
paranoia brain.
Boners.
that was the reference. Hashtag boners.
I am not aroused by all of this backstabbing.
No, but we know you are aroused in hammocks, so you know who knows how you're doing in the morning.
Yep. Okay, that makes sense to me. Also, in terms of keeping your numbers to kind of a controllable amount of bone crushers and not worrying about, like, you know, what happens if there's too many.
I'm going to need to fuck this up, and I need people to blame it on, so we need some bone crushers, but not a lot, so that they don't catch me fucking it up.
Okay, so, sorry, you're then taking, you have to take Kira, obviously,
Kira,
taking
Jinpai,
and, what, like, two more?
Yeah, two more sounds fine, yeah.
Okay. Great. You can take Draken the Blackened, who is a soldier who, even though all of the armor has been like hard forged, he insists on, like, every morning he wakes up and just like has the like sort of enchanted equivalent of a blowtorch and just like rechars his armor so he seems extra badass. Okay. What no one on the squad will tell him out of fear of reprisals is that it just truly makes him look like kind of embarrassing all the time because it rubs off on like his neck and his arms because he just kind of constantly has soot. So he just kind of looks like he forgot to like wash his neck and his wrists and stuff. So right. He's like, I'm scary. And everyone's like, mm-hmm. But it's kind of like if Batman takes the cowl off and he still has his eye makeup on. when he's got all of his armor on, he looks like Sauron. But when he takes his armor off, he just has like soot lines and sort of like the raccoon eyes and stuff. So you've got him. You have Hailmer Clubwing, who is a... sort of a very nimble, acrobatic. Let's see, what kind of creature are you? we'll say a tabaxi. Known for basically juggling clubs kind of like very acrobatically fighting while kind of tossing a weapon from like hand to hand to foot to hand. So you basically have one very nimble fighter, one like not necessarily good. Draken is a much more of like a sword and board kind of guy. So he's got a short sword, he's got a tower shield, and very much like meant to take hits, but also has limited sight lines, which will be good for your purposes. Obviously Jinpai, who's kind of like a mix between a tank and a berserker. Or barbarian.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Cool. And I would say probably twice that many Weln guards, just so we don't appear to be an invading force. It's like for every one of us, there's two of them.
Would you want to outfit your crew with local regalia? Like, do you want the weird ribbon sleeves?
No, I wouldn't want to compromise anyone's armor.
Cool. I was hoping you were going to say anyone's shtick.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, yeah. Anybody's cool oeuvre. But while that would be advantageous, I feel like that wouldn't come off as a bright idea to the rest of the Bone Crushers, so no.
Cool. I think that's the right call. I was going to penalize you for doing it. So good job. You've solved my etiquette for an army you're unfamiliar with puzzle.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So having outfitted your crew appropriately, you begin to make your way towards the docks. At the same time that Reginald as Quinny with Mickey and the urchins... are also making their way towards the docks for a fated showdown of heistly proportions. Meanwhile, Juniper, you and Pidwick are making your way kind of up towards the small farmstead that you were told to find. You've realized, however, on your travels with Pidwick, that although he is picking up the survival basics, he has a severe case of foot and mouth disorder whenever he talks, and might actually be a liability. And having not gotten answers you've needed several times because other characters had bigger agendas that prevented you from getting stuff you wanted, I think there is some fear that he might fuck things up. So here's my question. Do you want to bring Pidwick with you up to this farm, or do you want to try and figure out a way to politely have him not do that?
Now, Pidwick, I am going to entrust you with the most important task.
The Augur Scroll?
Something even more important. Which is watching after the steed of the Chosen One.
The Chosen One's steed.
Yeah, so can you just make sure she, like, clippity-cloppity is, like, fed and watered and all that stuff? There was a stream back there.
Wait,
and
you guys her, just, her like... name is Clippity-Cloppity?
Yeah.
The name of the Chosen One's steed is Clippity-Cloppity.
Yes, it is.
Listen, my name may just be Pidwick, Malacutius, but I gotta tell you, Juniper, I think you might need a more heroic name. For your horse.
Clippity Cloppity's name is her name. You can't stifle her light.
Okay, well, we don't have a lantern shutter for her, so there's no danger of that. But I don't understand. Like, you just named the horse. Like, you could just name the horse anything. And Clippity Cloppity is just, like, shooting horse-like daggers out of her horsey eyes.
Clippity Cloppity is a sentient being with her own wishes, desires, hopes, dreams, feelings. Her name is Clippity Cloppity. That's what she wants to be called.
You can speak horse?
I can speak with animals.
And like Pidwick's eyes get wide and his jaw drops. And he's just like, what is that like?
I don't know. It's wonderful. It's great. I'm really not a fan of this judgmental attitude.
I didn't understand, Chosen One. I just thought that you had... Listen, I spent some time considering branding back at Candlekeep, and I was trying to change our reputation as a stuffy library full of stuffy people, and it just occurred to me that perhaps there was a more advantageous name for your horse. I didn't realize that she had chosen it herself. I meant no judgment, only to improve upon your legend. You know, I assumed it would be like, yes, Juniper upon her mighty steed, Thunderstrike. Not like, Juniper upon her mighty steed, Clippity-Cloppity. I mean, it doesn't have the same heroic ring.
Could you please explain to me the importance of branding on a quest to, you know, maybe save the worlds?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to. And he takes out some parchment and begins to, like, unfold it. And he's like, okay, So listen, I grew up reading stories about chosen ones. And as someone who lives in a library, I must say, everything we do right now is becoming history. We're making history right now. When you taught me to poop in the woods, that was history. When you taught me how to wring out my socks and we did that cool dance where we put them on the line, that's history. Every part of this is becoming part of the history that people like me generations from now will read and be inspired by. So you need to be super inspiring as the chosen one, because no matter how this all turns out, the bards will sing of this for generations. You really have to consider your image.
I think I would like to be remembered for my deeds than for, you know, the names of things.
Admittedly, if those deeds are wrapped in a cloak of dumbness, well, no one's going to want to hear about them.
Do you know what? It doesn't even matter if I'm remembered, because that's not the goal here.
You see, that's what makes you a chosen one. But you say that, and then you will be remembered. It's a catch 22.
No, that's it. That's it. Nope. You clippity cloppity needs water. I need to focus on finding planeswalkers and possibly saving universes. Not important right now. Not important.
Keyword being right now.
No,
you're
at,
no, you were right the first time. It doesn't matter right now, but it's going to, though. To future generations.
I turn into Echo immediately, and I just slap him. It's like, get a hold of yourself.
Ah!
If you're back into Juniper, like, I'm sorry.
And clippity-cloppity goes, which you hear as, and that's why I hate children. And then clippity-cloppity winks at Pidwick, who's just like, ah, winking horse. Then he very slowly starts taking out water and walks over, and he's like, it's nice to meet you, clippity-cloppity. I'm sorry if I was rude. But, like, we really got to work on her image. As you, like, full-on tired Charlie Brown, fucking George Michael wandering away in Arrested Development.
Oh, 100%. It's just muttering myself. I'm like, what's going? I don't understand how to deal with this person.
As you make your way up to a small farmhouse, it's small but deep. So it's not audacious, but it is. When I say small, I mean like it's like one level. Sort of wide, almost looks like it could almost have a workshop in it. You can see sort of black smoke curling up from the chimney, you think you can hear the sound of wood being sawed around back. So taking a moment to collect yourself, you begin to head around the corner to see what this mysterious hermit can tell you about the nature of the Great Collide. Meanwhile, back at the docks, there is a smell of salt water on the air, Wellen isn't large enough to be like a big port, a bustling port, by any stretch. but in the same way that Hatsfield seems to be kind of a crossroads destination, this seems to be kind of a place you could have things shipped on your way through. You get the sense that this whole region seems to kind of be a stop on the route to somewhere better. It doesn't seem to kind of, like in sort of like Wild West terms, it'd be kind of like a city, like a town that pops up around like a post office or like a train station, where it isn't really, it's there to sort of facilitate travel, not to really be a destination in and of itself. So the port is small, but given the sort of defensive nature of this space, it is lightly defended. So there is a wall, like a wrought iron fence with kind of spiky bits on top, surrounding the sort of dock and port grounds. There's basically enough room for two kind of small to mid-sized ships to dump their cargo. As well as a sort of sorting warehouse off to one side, and what looks like if you've ever been to like a fresh fish market, this is one stop on the way to a market, so kind of where you can offload your catch and get it ready to sell sort of in the marketplace downtown. This is really strange. Can you guys roll me initiative, please? It's not for combat. I just need to know which story to tell first.
4.
14.
Well, that makes it somewhat easy. That's math even I can understand. Reginald, as Quinny, you and the urchins arrive first, which is fortuitous and makes more sense narratively, and I'm really glad it happened that way. I was really bummed for a second because I forgot. I was like, oh, fuck, Reginald's getting here first, but he's Quinny right now. It's just going to be a straight dungeon crawl next time. I'm like, you could turn left or right. Ooh, one way smells like fire. The other way has a green light. Yes, it was mold and fire.
You went left. There's a wall. Go right.
There was also a wall. You have completed my dungeon. And that's it for season 5, everybody. Good night. Check out Chris.
Tommy's going to sleep tonight.
Bye. I just fall asleep on air. You arrive with your urchin crew. Happily, before Reginald and his crew, so there isn't a checkpoint set up yet. Instead, there are two guards, as well as kind of a dock master, who is a gnome wearing a very unfortunate jean jacket jeans combo. That's just a bit too much jean, kind of all around. She is calling out orders to people as they're unloading from a ship. You can see that there are some essentially Navy mercenary soldiers standing by on the docks guarding the boxes. You can tell that they aren't locals. They're clearly with the ship. Classic kind of rough and tumble pirate types. They do seem very disciplined. They seem to be well in order. Can you roll me a perception check, please?
That is a 10.
10. The only distinction you can pull from this distance is there are these sort of pirate Navy guards who are guarding the offloading. The dockmaster, and then there are crew members unloading the boxes. So the rough and tumble fighter types aren't doing the lifting. Other members of the crew are. They're dressed a little bit differently, but you can tell they're kind of all part of one ship. Unfortunately, all of the boxes are the exact same, similar to getting an Amazon package, no matter how small what you're getting is. They are all uniform size. Think in... Every shooter video game I've ever played, there are wooden crates that have ammos or a single AK-47 in them. It's kind of that size crate. So probably about 4 feet wide, 3 feet deep, 3 feet tall, wooden crates all bearing the stamp of the shipping company.
Hello, everyone. This is Tyler Hewitt, just coming at you with a little special offer for you. You know, if you're a fan of what we're doing here on the show, then we have, to borrow a phrase from Jerry Holkins, a patron-oriented experience tailored just for you. If you go to
patreon.com/dumbdumbdice,
you can sign up and get a bunch of special features that we're not really going to make available to anyone else, so do that. Now. Well, not right now, but, you know.
All right. I feel like while he was still a ways away, Reginald in Quinny would ask Mickey very quietly, like, do you know what the name of the item is and who it was ordered by?
Listen, A, just want to tell you it's real comfortable in here. Thanks for the ride. B, it's part of a general shipment that the nobles were bringing in. Lots of goods come through here. It seems like this one's supposed to fall off the back of the back of the truck here, if that makes any sense. They must have marked it in some way. I'm not sure how. They kept mentioning something about light, some kind of way to see it that normal people couldn't do.
Interesting. All right.
And the item is called the brain stabby device. Cranium something or other. Cranium full guy, I think. They called it a cranium full guy.
Brain stabby, cranium full guy.
Sorry, okay, sometimes it's hard to get the nuances of, you know, human speech. It's hard to hear common through these rat ears.
So the Dark Master theoretically won't know about where this has been sent.
Yeah. That's the vibe I got. Off.
It'll be down to the crew or probably those spooky mercenaries. Maybe I should approach them.
I mean, this all sounds good to me, but who am I? I'm just a rat.
Everybody else, get into positions. Team Distraction, Team Gagmouth, let's do this.
All right. what instructions did you give Team Distraction in terms of how they should arrange themselves?
So the lookout's jobs are just to watch for when the Bone Crushers show up. If the Bone Crushers are distracting themselves doing tasks, let that happen. But just the lookout's job are to, like, tell the other guys when to, like, go, essentially. Dice's job is if they get past everything else and they're finally going for the ship, he's our last ditch, like, get in the way, do whatever you need to do to distract them, and then everybody can play in into that. And Pointy's job is to drop, like, basically pickpocket something to Reginald. And the goal is that it's basically a letter being like, take as much time as you can. Once you read this, eat this. Do not let the letter be there. Blame everything on Kira Bloodfist if this goes right.
By that logic, then, would you hold off on this operation until you see the Bone Crushers coming?
No, because he wants, like, they're a backup crew, essentially. If he can get this to the other boat, like, he wants the extra time to, like, take a shot if he fails, come up with a new plan, steal a boat kind of thing. The hope is, in a perfect world, this whole job is done before the Bone Crushers show up, and then he just Eldritch Blasts and they take off. Because he figures that's what Quinny would do.
Okay, so we need some roles for this crew, because basically the two important pieces that we need roles for are the lookouts and Tren, in terms of his luck finding a boat to steal.
Okay.
Rather than me rolling a bunch of dice with NPC stats, it will not surprise you to know I did not stat out 8 urchins with individual personalities and character types. Let's use your stats, and this will be kind of how good were you at instructing them to do this.
I think that makes sense.
So from the lookouts, I'm going to need a perception check. You do have advantage on it because there are 2 of them using creepy twin speak. From Tren, I'm going to need... Man, I miss Streetwise. Investigation, please.
Cool. The lookout's got a 14.
Okay.
And then investigation is good because Reginald's very smart as a general and spotting things. So he's got advantage on intelligence checks. And that is still not a great number. It's an 11, but that feels true to Tren's ability level.
That is very good for... That is the best roll Tren has ever had. When he takes 10, he takes a 2.
I'm proud of him. I rolled a 2 and a 6. So it's, they were not generous, the dice gods.
It's all right. Again, I think they are consummate with the level of expertise we gave all these characters. Okay, excellent. So the lookouts go and take up their perches. In my head, they just look like Sherry and Terry from The Simpsons. So just kind of keep that in mind. Purple hair, like unnecessary bangs, and just kind of a general, like, generally sour looking demeanor. So they go and take up their positions. Tren, he's walking with you, and then he does that thing in, like, heist films where someone peels off. He's wearing one of those jackets, like, it's like a bomber jacket, but the pockets are a little too high. So rather than, like, comfortably at kind of his waist level, they're kind of, like, mid-chest, and he's just like, I got this. And he kind of nods and, like, peels away. And then as he's peeling away, he realizes that with no one watching it, it's not cool and no one really cares. And you just kind of see him slump a bit and be like, yeah, right. And disappear into the alleyways. The rest of you begin to make your way up to the gates. Fluffy and the gagged soldiers, I believe you're going with.
Yeah. They're all gagged because basically Fluffy's mouth was sewn shut, so it felt thematically appropriate in case they'd met him. And also, he didn't want them to talk because he knew they'd tank it immediately.
You are correct, sir. All right, so you make your way up. Tyler, you and your crew are approaching, but at a bit of a further distance. I think there's something kind of fun to the idea of people kind of following the rules, even if they're the bad guys, and people trying to do a heist, in that the dockmaster told you there'd be a certain time when the boat was unloaded.
Yeah.
You just kind of, that's when you're going to show up. Like, there's nothing you can do till then.
We were talking about some way to identify the box as well, right? Some symbol?
Yes. So, essentially, there is a little magnifying glass or like it kind of like monocle size, but kind of like those little magnifiers that you can use. Mm-hmm. There is a marking on one of the crates that can only be identified using that.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you've been informed that your contact left the mark sort of in the bottom left of one of the end sides of the crates. Now, unfortunately, because of the nature of these crates, there's no way to tell which end. So unfortunately, it's basically going to be like a corner, 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 corner. Like, it's not, this is by no means a clean operation.
Do we know what the symbol looks like?
Any symbol in that corner that's invisible to the naked eye will be
just,
this.
And we're just looking for a marking of any sort that is unseeable by the naked eye, but can be visible through this monocle.
Yeah, I like to think that given the general derision that Declan's unit has towards this world, the mechanic of it matters, but like they don't really care about any of the flags or sigils or anything else that's going on in this place because they're like, oh, everyone's super weak here. That's great. We'll roll them. Like, it's very much that Star Trek Mirror Universe idea, which is just like, oh, wow, you guys aren't an army of super killers? Jesus. They're like, we're from the Federation. It's like, fucking okay, man. I don't care. I really don't care. Like, it's like children being like, we're our own nation. And you're like, no, you're not. Shut up. Go to work. so, yeah, they basically, they're like, there's a symbol. It's this. And I think as Quinny, that would actually be kind of frustrating because it's more efficient. But they're not subtle. They're bad at this.
Okay.
Because I feel like, and Ryan, I mean, we've kind of collectively made this Infinite War timeline thing. I would assume there's a lot of cloak and dagger, but I'm betting it's pretty brutalist, like almost more insurgency type stuff than like, and like court poisonings rather than like, we'll secretly ship a box in. And like, there'd be no Trojan horse. It would just be a horse full of dynamite, you know?
Yeah, it's a world where like you lose, you die. So there's not a whole lot of like polite conflict. Like there's no tradecraft to spying. You sell out the information and kill the guy you got it from, or he probably stabs you. That's spying.
Yeah. Great. So on the other hand, like all the bone crushers you're with are like, this is very sneaky. This is Draken is just like, I'm very impressed. This is a very impressive thing we're doing. Secret symbols. Who'd have thought? And then he pats you on the back, Reginald, and he's like, I wanted to say thank you for bringing me along on this one. I know you and I haven't always seen eye to eye, but I've always really respected you. Now you say something nice about me.
That's right. This is Draken, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I was just going to say, your armor is looking blackened as ever today, Draken. It's really something, and I'm shaking in my boots.
No one's ever noticed that I've done this before.
I always notice, Draken.
Oh. Well, that's very nice to hear. Thank you. You can't see it, but I have a single tear rolling through the soot under my helmet right now. It's quite special.
That sounds special. Just like, yes, good.
You notice Draken, who is admittedly already like 7 feet tall, straighten up a little bit. Seems really happy. It occurs to you for not the first time that these people are so fucking starved for any kind of encouragement that even being kind of confused and vaguely sarcastic is the nicest thing that's ever been said to this man. You also feel like, being a very stealthy and acrobatic guy yourself in happier times, can you roll me an acrobatics check, please? I know this is a bad bonus for Reginald, but you can roll with advantage because Quinny is good at it.
Okay. 11.
Hailmer Clubwing seems very flashy, but as someone who's used to dodging, you're actually not sure how effective they'll be. They might just look really good while fighting, which might kind of be why they're along for the ride. Okay. It's the difference. I remember my Aikido sensei when I was in high school was like, we have to watch these videos of Aikido masters, and they don't dodge. They literally just take as little possible room to get out of the way.
Mr. Johnston, it, right?
Yeah. Sensei Johnston, he's great. When you watch like the absolute masters of it, it's insane because like I always like to imagine like kung fu movie dodging, but it's literally like, oh, if an inch will get me out of the way of the blade, I'll just move an inch.
Right.
So as Quinny, that's often what you've been doing because it's just more, it reserves your energy. It doesn't open you up to further attacks, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this guy, as he's walking, is doing a lot of like unnecessary, almost.
So I imagine he fights like Gomez Adams.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
Immense theatricality to the fight.
That's exactly it. Okay. Yes. And in a world that's incredibly blunt, that is probably actually fairly effective. But for you watching it, you're like, basically, I'm just trying to give you the, like, could Quinny take this guy?
Yeah.
Scans of your new troops. And yeah, this guy feels like he'll look real good, but you could probably out dodge him.
Okay. All right. That's good to know.
I gotta rewatch The Addams Family. I haven't seen it in years, and just every time I think about it or we talk about it on the show, it just makes me so happy, and I'm like,
really good. It holds up very well.
Yeah.
Great.
As someone who rewatches it at least once a year.
Yeah.
As a brief aside, someone posted a script piece that was just like in the stage directions, they're like, these guys want to fuck all the time. That's all they're thinking about. It's a kid's movie, so like, don't say it explicitly, but that's what this is about. And I was like, yay! anyway, that's your Addams Family moment of dum-dums for the day. So you're kind of eyeing up the troops. Kira is being fairly mission-focused, but is seemingly treating you with a degree of deference and respect. Is there anything you want to try and observe or affect about Kira? The answer may absolutely be no, but as on your way there, you're kind of observing the new people in the unit. Is there anything you're thinking about in terms of her?
How does she interact with the other members of the unit? Like, if I've been friendly and you know, courteous with big air quotes thus far, how does she interact with these same folks? How impeccable is her reputation?
She's got that same kind of jokey, like, one of the guys attitude she had when you saw her first interact with Reginald as himself in the bar.
She's not like other girls?
Yeah, I mean, like, she's tough. it's an almost overdone sense of, like, I think the vibe, you've never really been part of a unit per se.
Closest would be the like the dum-dums.
Yeah.
And then some gang stuff before prison.
Well, actually, you would have seen this on the pirate ship when you guys were enslaved that one time. She is, the danger in the way she's acting is there's a sense of, I'm one of you guys. It's all of us versus this asshole, right? But with just enough edge that if you were to venture a guess, and you did see this definitely happen on the pirate ship a couple times, she might be setting herself up as a future commander by being like, I'm equals with you, but I'm the first amongst equals with you. There is a, as Ryan pointed out, these guys are kind of like the interns, like they're not the A team, but she's definitely the best of the bunch. So there is a, she's definitely not kind to them. There's a bit more, ha ha ha, we're all on the same side, but she does snap them a bit easier. So I think in terms of a leadership perspective, you're a bit caught between, on the one hand, there's a familiarity there and kind of a, well, we're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
Do we trust this guy? On the other hand, you can tell that this rubs someone like Draken the wrong way.
Okay.
Like, Junpei seems also a little bit irked by it, otherwise he wouldn't have joined up so easily, but you get the sense that because everyone in this army seems to have their own deal, Like, it's not like, we're all foot soldiers. It's like, no, I'm tank guy, and that's
right.
This person. There is a sense of rivalry, and I think a little bit of too big for your britches, if that makes sense.
Okay.
However, this is an alpha-based world, so if she can beat them up, she's probably their boss.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. So let's get back to the urchins. Team Urchin. Ryan as Reginald, as Quinny, as Fluffy McSnogglekin.
Ears.
You approach the gates, and the guards kind of stand to attention, and they say, pardon me, sir, do you and your gagged compatriots have business here today?
And he's doing, like, spooky walk with the legs, and he tilts his head 90 degrees to the side, and then, like, leans forwards. The veil's still in place. He's careful about that.
Fluffy McSnogglekins! I've been sent by Kira Bloodfist for the secret cargo so we can collect it. Another shipment was attacked and we can't lose this one. Whoever brings me that cargo shall receive 1,000 gold!
You sound like Graham Chapman and John Cleese doing the two old ladies talking about the penguin on top of the television.
Look, that's you know the base for it's most amazing. Of my voices is Monty Python. He's just picking up what I'm putting down. It's good.
It's beautiful. I love it.
Yeah, that's great, Ryan. So I'm going to make you roll a deception check. You definitely have advantage. Nice. Your attention to detail is excellent as always, but I do feel the moral obligation as the DM of a Dungeons & Dragons game to occasionally make dice hit the table.
That's fair.
Behind you, through the gags, you hear Lyndon mutter, "So fucking cool."
That is a 17. Oh, question. This is a weird thing. One of my two dice on the roll was a 1. Do I re-roll that with luck, or does the advantage cancel it out, or how does that work?
You re-roll ones on
skill then checks. Let's find out. It might be better. Oh, it's a shitload better. 29!
Yeah, you feel like you're fucking it up for a hot second, but then something just shifts, and for a moment, you become Fluffy McSnogglekin. It helps that when you're scared, like when you're most terrified, in your head, that's how your voice sounds when you're like panic shrieking. So it's nice to actually just get to give vocality to that. It's a real pleasure. So the guards nod and say, Master McSnogglekin, it's a pleasure to have you here. Perhaps your best to speak to the dock master, although 1,000 gold does sound rather good. Unfortunately, I serve a higher purpose. Small town guard. he waves over the dock master, and she comes over with the thwip, thwip, thwip of all denim all the time in her Canadian tuxedo, and says,
yes, Master McSnogglekin, you are, I'm sorry, who sent you? Kira Bloodfist, is that's correct? Oh, okay, yeah, we have her listed, and you as well, actually, as one of our agents. Although, I was told to expect, is there a Mr. Tingler here with you?
He was delayed! Protecting our assets!
Kind of a funny name, Tingler. Sounds kind of dumb, doesn't it? Tingler?
Yes! What one a dumb day, name. I will feast on his dreams and hopes!
Okay, you're real spooky. I was not expecting that from a delivery today. Wow, and I'm sorry, it says here you're a caterer for the lady and the two lords?
Yes! I cook what they eat! Now I need the package!
Wow, okie dokie, must be some cardamom or another important spice. Okay, well, let's see if we can find that for you. I do have strict orders from Falstaff Shipping to make sure that they unload everything before we touch it. But we can start looking. Pardon me, and she kind of yells to two of the guys unloading boxes. Now that you're a bit closer, can you roll me another perception check, please?
Fifteen.
So you notice that the people offloading the boxes walk a bit awkwardly, and as you're looking, it's almost like their legs aren't necessarily the same height. So some kind of like awkward, slight, shuffle stepping. And now that you're a bit closer, you can actually see that there are a number of seams, sort of across their faces, with, very, clear stitching. And their skin tones don't always exactly match up. Hmm. Based on your knowledge from your world, you would see that the crew are flesh golems.
All right. And then I think what he'll say to the dock master is, I understand your master wants all things unloaded, but there is one thing that can speed anything. Gold! And he'll say, 10,000 gold for the item now, or 1,000 later.
I like that they're both bribes. One of them's just much better. She says, wow, that's, I could buy so many jean jackets with that. Oh, I could finally get that cool bedazzler I wanted. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Let's do this. But listen, we don't get too many, shipments, from Falstaff Shipping, but we have been told that, the crew reacts very badly. So we might need to be a little bit stealthy about it. Go ahead and roll a stealth check.
This
is a classic game of observe the box and then hide behind the box as the flesh golems go about their work. So far, you're able to begin examining the boxes. Now, the catch is you do not have the magical monocle, nor do you know that that's how they're stamped. She is trying to give you like surreptitious signals about where she thinks it is. So basically, I'm going to ask you to try and pass a series of checks in order to obtain this box. As she kind of distracts the flesh golems and the mercenaries.
Tom?
Yep.
Looking at all of these boxes, I would like to lift my eye patch and use my eye of true seeing to see if I can spot it within these boxes or a weird magical thing no one can see.
Fair enough. I will say that the cranial fulcrum in and of itself isn't actually magic. It's purely mechanical, but the glowing insignia definitely is. That said, it's very, very light magic. So you can kind of get a dull pulse of it that you'll need to pursue, but this will cut your checks down by quite a bit.
Great.
Instead, it'll be more so about can you get to it and get back rather than can you find it. But yes, that is an apt use of it. Look at you being a good Quinny. Good work. Tyler, you and your crew arrive to find the guards having kind of closed the gate to the docks. And they look very surprised to see you, but not as surprised as you are when an urchin stumbles into your way, bumping into you, and his glasses fly off his nose, and he's like, oh, my glasses! Jeez! And then he trips over his feet, and everyone's laughing at him, and like Kira steps on him and just pushes his head into the mud until he starts to flail a bit, and then when the flailing is starting to like quiet down a bit, she lets him up gasping, and he's just like, oh fuck, and just like spits out a bunch of mud. He's like, fuck the glasses and fuck all of you, and then he runs away. You recognize him as the kid who bumped into you at Reunities.
That hurts my heart. I'll
sorry, I should have asked, would you interrupt that?
It's too late now.
Yeah. I'll pick up the glasses.
Oh. It's also be nice to lay on his grave later.
Yeah.
Okay, so you...
The gate is closed, you say?
The gate is closed. The two guards are standing there, but they do seem very vexed to see all of you. Also, can you roll me a perception check, please?
Perception is wisdom. So that's 11.
11? You recognize him as the same kid who bumped into you, and he bumped into you in the same way. So you are aware that he likely left something on you.
Okay. It doesn't feel appropriate to do like a pat down and try and figure out what's been
you are correct
put on me right now. So we'll focus on getting in there first, and then I'll see if there's anything on me.
Okay, cool. The guards say, "Hi. I'm sorry. Are you with the caterers from the mansion?" This was a cover story you'd been told of.
Okay. Then I would just say, yes, that's correct. We're the caterers here to pick up a shipment of foodstuffs for the boys here. And I slap one of the whelm guards on the back.
He wheezes so hard.
As you can see, they need a hearty meal. And they've earned it.
He says, thank you, sire. The guards are like, well, I believe one of your number is already here. Master McSnugglekin is just inside the gates right now. So if you wait a moment, I'm sure he'll bring out whatever you need.
I look to Kira to get a read of what that means to her.
Kira's eyes narrow. She just kind of turns to you and she's like,
okay, now my eyes are narrowed.
She narrows her eyes more.
I can't see anymore.
Yeah, she closes her eyes. You're just French stewarding at each other. So with both your eyes like madly pinched shut, she's just like, how sure are you that you put Fluffy down?
You saw. He was a skin bag by the time I was done with him.
Can he reinflate?
No.
Well, you're the one who recruited him, so I have to trust you on that.
I always make sure I know my allies' weaknesses, because I grew up in a fucking hellscape, so I knew I just had to pop him once, you know, and that balloon wasn't coming back.
I'm not going to make you roll deception check, because you've lived his experiences now, and you said it with great conviction. And she's like, well, good thing I don't have any weaknesses. Can we open our eyes now?
About you.
Well, good. I'm glad you have that regret. Should we open our eyes now? I assume Fluffy's actually dead then.
My eyes were open the whole time. You look stupid. Let's go.
Damn, my one weakness! she opens her eyes and, like, with fury, the fury of having been taken by a clever ruse. So she says, if that isn't Fluffy, then who the fuck is in there?
We need to investigate immediately.
We should. And then both of you turn to instruct the guards. Are you going to try and do it before she can?
I think it's got to be that thing of we're both talking at the same time.
All right, let's do it on three.
Yeah.
One, two, three. Listen, you're going to need to open that door.
Fan out. Wait, well,
yeah, fan, no. What, no, no
everybody.
No, march no, forward.
Listen to me.
Listen to
I'm
him, but also.
I'm the general. I'm the super general.
Damn. You pulled rank. My only other weakness. So she begrudgingly crosses her arms and like gives you a sarcastic like, go ahead with one hand.
All right. Everybody fan out. We're looking for someone pretending to be a member of the Bone Crushers. So ask around for someone. If they're convincing enough for these guards, then I guess we should just provide a general description of Fluffy and see if we can find him anywhere. Also, don't forget to keep an eye out for the merchandise. I feel like merchandise is enough of a thief thing that like Quinny keeps like saying it by accident.
Kira just goes, you mean the food stuffs?
The food stuffs, yes.
Because we're caterers.
For the guards, and we're caterers.
Yeah.
Open, and I just get like, just I lean in like so close to this fucking gate guard, and I say, open the gate.
I can roll me an intimidation check.
My nose is like touching his nose.
Uh-oh, and it's not for cute little nose kisses.
No, it's not.
It's for rage.
What's intimidation? Is that charisma?
Charisma, yeah.
That's not bad. That's 19 total. Oh, wait. Intimidation? Never mind. That's a bit more. That's 23 total.
Let the caterers in. They seem real intense about those foodstuffs. The gates open. Ryan as Reginald, as Quinny as Fluffy. You hear... two voices outside being like,
I see Neverwinter, I see Waterdeep, I see people whose presence we shouldn't keep.
And then they fall off the wall and run away, which was, of course, the clandestine sign that you'd given them. As you kind of look through the veil of your hat, you see the majestic form of yourself striding forward with just a fucking bunch of bone crushers, and you realize this job just got a little more complicated. And Mickey's like, hey, are we winning?
Well, we're not losing.
Finish the thing.
No. We're not losing. And then he's going to duck down and try to use the crates he's searching amongst as cover to stay hidden.
Amazing.
So stilts.
Yeah, but he's going low. He's going to play it out. You know, he's already hiding from golems. So this is really just like 1/10 more.
And thus you find yourself in that classic adage stuck between a murder party in a golem place.
This episode of Dumb Dumbs and Dragons features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at the Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Laura Elizabeth at EL Hamstring on Twitter, and our fantastic DM Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode was edited by Ryan LaPlante, and all of Dumb Dumbs and Dice's art is by Decapitated Markers, or at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are And Now for That Massive Coronary and Skipping Through the Orchestra Pit Part 1 by Peter Gresser, and our ad music is No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R, all available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice, and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. But most importantly, we've got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice, or you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. And tune in next week for more Dum Dums and Dragons.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Manicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Olin Anderson, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord Abradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Zekin X, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.